It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby. Mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa. Take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to ChumbaCasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Ch-ch-chumba. ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
This is the Armchair Cricket Podcast.
Hello all. Welcome to another episode of Armchair Cricket Podcast, a podcast focusing on test cricket by armchair critics of the game. I'm your host, Ajit. We would like to wish all our listeners happy festivities and a Merry Christmas and a good upcoming New Year. So with this, you know, this is the time of the year. If you are a test match fan, you would be looking forward to it. Plenty of new tests start in South Asia as well as in the Southern Hemisphere. So, as expected, there are a couple of Boxing Day test matches that we can discuss about. But to help me unpack these things, as well as the IPL auction that took place not so long ago, I have a really special guest. I'm told he has listened to a couple of episodes of our podcast as well, so I'm curious what he thinks about it. Welcome to the podcast, Robin.
Yeah, hello Ajit. Thanks for having me. Looking forward to a great chat about the game that we love. So yeah, let's get started.
Perfect. Before we go into the games themselves, a little bit about you, Robin, the sports fan, the cricket fan, right? So how did this come about? I mean, I guess being from the Southern Asian subcontinent, it's not too much of a surprise to see you're a big fan. But how did this come about? When did the bug bite you?
Yeah, so it really started from after India won the 2007 T20 World Cup, because I'm from Ranchi and Dhoni won the World Cup, so he was everywhere in the newspapers, in the news channels, everywhere it was Dhoni. So that's how I wanted to, you know, play the game, start playing the game a bit seriously. So that's how it started, and then it took off, and here we are.
Perfect. Well, I've heard you and your comments being read out on Guerrilla Cricket, for example. Also, I think we share a bit of the social media space where, you know, we interact and so on. So it's nice to hear. Do you play yourself or do you just do analysis and other things?
No, I play the game. Initially, I like everyone else, like every kid in India, I started playing with the in our locality. Then I played for the school team. I played for a club here in Ranchi. Then I played A division cricket, B division, divisional cricket in Ranchi. Then school, represented school at national level, you can say. Our school had all the schools in the country that came under the group, organized a national level tournament. So I represented the school in that. And yeah, then after that, it was really, you know, tough to manage studies and the game as well. So yeah, it had to be left out. But yeah, I do play whenever I can. So yeah, happy to be here where I am. So
perfect. So what was your playing role?
Yeah, so I used to be a bowling all-rounder, you can say, but I opened quite a few times later in the, you can say, my short career. So Yeah, mostly an all-rounder.
All right. Before we actually go and discuss the IPL, I think we can have a quick chat about the ongoing test series. So since it's the 27th, we are recording on the 27th, there are already two tests that have started, Boxing Day tests. One in the Southern Hemisphere between South Africa and Australia, the other one in the Northern Hemisphere between Pakistan and New Zealand. So if we go first to the South Africa-Australia tests, so this is the second test, the Melbourne test, the Boxing Day test, the traditional one. I think South Africa will be very, very disappointed looking at how they find themselves, because at 189 all out on a fairly sporting pitch, right, in MCG, they would be very, very disappointed because, well, first of all, they blinked 10 minutes before lunch where they lost two wickets in like 5 minutes before lunch. And then they sort of consolidated beautifully in the middle session where Australia sort of lost a bit of steam. But then from 5 for 179, you would think they would go to 270, 275, maybe give themselves a decent chance. But they really, really let it go from that point on where they lost five wickets for just 10 runs. So again, the moment they came back from from tea, they looked a bit off. And that's how it played out because Cameron Green stepped up. Australia had lost Stark. He had sort of dislocated the top half of his left-hand middle finger, the one he probably uses a lot for bowling. And he'll not be able to bowl by the looks of it in the remaining remainder of the test. But Cameron Green had stepped up. He took a 5-for, which included a 4-for-0 in that five-wicket collapse that South Africa suffered. And then Australia sort of finished the day quietly, but confidently. But then, you know, Warner was itching for something special. He's playing his 100th test, and he bossed day two before he retired hurt due to cramps. He made an unbeaten 200 of just 254 balls. This is the old Warner, the Warner we've come to know who bullies bowlers. So in a mere 91 overs that Australia are able to bat in the first innings, they have made 386 with solid contributions from Smith, 85, Travis Head, who's 48 not out, and Cameron Green was interestingly retired hurt. It looks like he's bruised his hand thanks to a sort of a rising delivery from Henrik Norkia, but still Australia are really well placed. So they already have a very handy lead, 197 run lead. And I don't think they'll stop batting anyway. So Robin, do you see any chance South Africa may be able to come back since that they're chasing this test?
I personally don't, to be honest, because they just really let it off in the first innings. And I read a stat on Twitter, I guess, that they haven't crossed 200 in their last seven test innings. So that's you know that the batting is going through a lean patch at the moment, and they really need to, you know, start being consistent with the bat. The batters need to step up. I mean, and with the kind of lead Australia have had at the moment and the position that they are in, I don't think that there's any slim chances of the Proteas fighting back. So yeah, let's see what they have in the second innings with the bat. So
mostly their skipper, right? Their redoubtable skipper, Dean Elgar, who's usually very good. He sort of had a lean patch. I thought he was going to break it yesterday when he got to about 26. But then he was frustrated out, I think. And then he got run out for the first time ever, apparently, in his test career. He's been run out. And then, you know, that collapse really, where Kesho Maharaj, Kavishwara Pada, these are all people who are able to actually hold a bat, as they say. I mean, hang around. But they were sorted out.
Yeah, and you do expect Maharaj to, you know, contribute with the bat every now and then. So yeah, him not performing lower down the order was a bit of a, you know, hard time for the Proteas. And then the top order also, you know, thrown away their wickets, like Sarel Hervier just chased a wide one to the slips. And then Theunis de Bruin, again, Babuma is also not performing in the tests as well after the T20. So yeah, but Marco Jansen with the bat was the only positive.
Absolutely. I mean, he's probably one step higher than he is ready for at this stage. Maybe he's a good number 8 at this stage. He's number 7. I think they're one bowler too many on this pitch. But then, look, they don't have the luxury of somebody like a Cameron Green, a full all-rounder. So Kesho Maharaj and Marco Jansen sort of together, they form one all-rounder. So I guess in that way, look, six batters that South Africa do have, that's all right, right? Five full batters and a half of each. That should be enough, but really, really unfortunate now that, well, South Africa at least they had a real good chance of making the finals of the World Test Championship if they did well in Australia. But we don't know what will happen if Australia managed to blank South Africa, and then between them and India, they sort of do well. At least if one of them does well and the other one is able to take a test home, then I think it'll be India-Australia test World Test Championship final game. So at least for me, South Africa, who started really well this cycle when they beat India at home, sort of will not be doing justice to their, you know, their start to the cycle. But well, these things come and go. Next one, the next test is slightly more evenly balanced. So this is between Pakistan and New Zealand, where, you know, Pakistan did something that we were all calling out for as fans. They have had a bit of a, you know, they've had a bit of a topsy-turvy test match selection. Again, we have a new test match attack in Mir Hamza and Mohammad Wasim with the new ball. But then their spin options remain steady. You have Norman Ali and Abrar, the leg break bowler who's sort of been a sensation since he's made a debut. They both are there. And New Zealand have also interestingly packed their, you know, their bowling lineup with as many as three spinners. So Pakistan did one more thing different. So they gave, well, I don't know if it's called a rest or they dropped him. But the keeper, the incumbent keeper, was dropped and Sarfraz Ahmed was given a go. So in this case, Sarfraz Ahmed took the chance and he scored 86 very crucial runs. So Pakistan were in a bit of trouble at, you know, let's say 3 for 48, well, but 4 for 110, they were definitely in trouble because Saud Shakil has been doing very well for them. And when he got out, there was a chance maybe they could have gotten out for 250 or so. But then between Babar Azam and Sarfraz Ahmed, they went on and took the score to 306. So 196-run partnership, very useful one. And sort of Sarfraz missed out on 186. But then Agha Salman, who went to 50 yesterday in the company of his skipper, who himself had made 161, well, he got to 100 this morning. Because that's another thing. Maybe if Agha Salman had not batted, there was a chance Pakistan could be all out by around 350 or 360. But because they lost Babar very early in the morning, without any more additions to his score. So sort of New Zealand will be bittersweet with the result that they have achieved. 438 is not too far away because the pitch is good. So it's one of those traditional Karachi pitches where the pitch will be good for the first 3 to 4 days and then the event sort of speed up very quickly. So the way New Zealand openers batted, right? So Tom Latham 78 not out and Devon Conway 82 not out. They are making it seem that the pitch has no demons in it, Robin.
And that has been the story of Pakistan pitches in the last two test series, because the pitches in against England were quite flat as well, and they didn't even turn that much as you expect the subcontinent pitches to on like day 4, day 5. So yeah, that has been their way to go, I guess. So they are looking forward. I think they are looking to, you know, build you know, set flat pitches and then score big and then, you know, just bowl well after the batters have done a good job. So yeah, the batters did a great job in the first innings, but the Kiwis are off to a good start and let's see how well they bowl in the next day.
Look, it's going to be a good batting day or a decent batting day tomorrow as well. If the New Zealand batters can sort of hold their shape, maybe get 250 plus runs tomorrow, even 4 or 5 wickets lost is not a problem. They've not lost a wicket at all. They could sort of push for a decent lead. Even a 60-80 run lead could be big on these pitches. And for now, the New Zealand spinners look better than their counterparts, right? So if you look at the scorecard, New Zealand spinners, between them, they have taken 6 wickets. But Pakistan spinners in, it must be said, not a lot of bowling, only 47 overs, have taken no wickets. So second innings, it will be a shootout, I think, between the spinners on both sides. And even 150 might be a very good target. Well, speaking of 150-run target, India were made to sweat a lot by Bangladesh for, 150-run target, less than 150-run target on the fourth innings. That was more of a traditional pitch and a traditional sort of a game that India and Bangladesh played out in Mirpur. So, I don't know how much of the test series you were able to catch, Robin, between India and Bangladesh?
Yeah, I did watch the last day, a few hours of the last day. But one thing I'd like to say is the Bangladesh pitches are, I think, even too extreme when you are talking about the subcontinent pitches, because I don't think the Indian pitches are the Indian pitches do turn in on the last day or the fourth day, but they are still good for batting when you are set. But these pitches are just low bounce, ball turning like from one square to other square. So yeah, I think the pitch was a bit extreme, but yeah, that's how the Bangladesh pitches are, and we expect them to do, you know, set those kind of pitches so that spinners could come into the play.
Well, I mean, if you talk to certain English and Australian batsmen, they'll probably say Indian pitches are more, air quotes, spin friendly from day one. But Bangladesh have also been known to put up pitches which will lead the test match not going further than the third day or so. But this was a more traditional pitch. You know, Bangladesh having batted first, they'll be a bit disappointed once more. Only 227, and with Mominul Haq, the comeback kid, scoring the highest, and nobody else really making a big score because there were plenty of teens and 20s there. And India, they'll be very happy with Umesh Yadav's performance. Was I think superb. And you know, Siraj bowled pretty well in both the innings without a lot of luck, and Jaidev Unadkat was given another chance ahead of, slightly controversially, somebody like Kuldeep Yadav, because Kuldeep Yadav was the player of the game for me in the first test. For him to sit down and not get another game was a bit weird when you look at it. But look, as long as the results are achieved, as a management team, you sort of said, these are my best players for this sort of a condition, I'm going to go with them, and you sort of delivered a result, it's okay. And I think Kuldeep, the batsman, may not have helped in the last innings. Nonetheless, you could then say Kuldeep, the bowler, would have not let the lead go that high. In any case, India, when they came back to bat, they'll be a bit disappointed themselves because their top order went nowhere. But then Rishabh Pant and Shreyas Iyer made sure India had a very good lead, and the tail did what it could. And Shakib Ul Hasan, 4-4, again, sort of showing how important he is for this Bangladeshi team. And again, come the second innings, Litan Das sort of gave that fillip with Nurul Hasan and Taskeen Ahmed. Otherwise, even a target of 145 would have been very, very far away, because at 6 for 113, you would think India would get a 50-60 run target, right? And then Nurul Hasan with the counter-punching 31, and then Taskeen Ahmed, who sort of built his batting skills pretty well these days, as far as, you know, holding one end goes and then sometimes even hitting those couple of big hits. And then I think Litan Das, who's been quite the find for Bangladesh in 2022, right? So he's kept on going, and he made that very crucial 73. I think when you look at South Asian conditions, right, usually in exactly the same situation, if Sri Lanka were to be the team playing, I expect there will come that amazing innings. Somebody like Dhananjay De Silva, Dinesh Chandimal, somebody would play that 173 would be 153. 73 would be 153. And then opposition would get a 220 run target and they would win the game. In this case, probably Bangladesh, they would think they're probably 20-30 runs short.
Yeah, of course. And the kind of position like Litan was in the second innings, I thought they could have looked for like, yeah, more 25-30 runs. So yeah, they were a few short.
And then India sprung a bit of a surprise, sending Akshar Patel at number 4. But I was really disappointed that evening by the attitude of the Indian chasers, the top 3 specifically. Cheteshwar Pujara, you could say, was a little bit unlucky. But Shubman Gill, KL Rahul and Kohli, they did not look to take the air quotes bull by the horns, as they say, take the spinners a little bit on with the lens that they were bowling. By the way, Shakib Ul Hasan was right on the money. You had to give him that respect. But Mehdi Hasan Miraz reaped the benefits, caught a 5-4 because of that. And well, you know, I think this has been much highlighted in social media as well. Ashwin was dropped by Mominul with India requiring 65 runs. And as well as Shreyas Iyer batted, as assuredly as he batted, and Ashwin sort of scored the runs at the end, I think had that catch been taken off Ashwin, do you think India would have got across the line?
Nah, I don't think. I think after Ashwin, I don't think there was someone who could just hold the crease and bat for long alongside Iyer. So yeah, that was a crucial. Or you can say that the Mominul dropped the match. And how Ashwin played in the last, like when he scored those winning runs, that was quite good because he attacked at the right time, chose the right shots on that kind of surface. So yeah, that was quite brilliant from Ashwin.
So Ashwin once again showing, right, as long as you are in home conditions, he'll be a match winner both with the bat and ball. I mean, look, he has 500s and 1450s by the looks of it, right? So you won't write him off. And I think I dare say he has still a couple of really good performances, both with the bat and ball left in him. And people who are writing him off, well, good luck, right? So India won that series. They'll be very happy with that. Those were, let's say, the 3 big games that I wanted to cover from test matches perspective. Now I think we should go to the main segment of this episode. So we would like to do a quick review, team by team review of how they stack up at the end of the IPL auctions that have happened leading to the next season, 2023 season. So Robin, over to you. Let's start with your favorite team maybe. Who's your favorite team and let's start there.
Yeah, that's obviously CSK, and I think they did a great, not that great, but yeah, they did a fairly good job in the auctions, because before the last season was quite horrible, I can say. So yeah, hopefully a good season, and then we desperately needed a good all-rounder, and we all thought that it was going to be Sam Curran, and they really just splashed the purse for him. But yeah, Punjab again with that huge purse that they have every year outbid us and MI as well to an extent. And then it was great to see Ben Stokes in CSK, because Stokes is a clutch player. You know, we have seen in the IPL as well when he played for the Pune Super Giants, couple of innings for the Rajasthan Royals as well. And yeah, Stokes is a great addition to the squad, and hopefully he'll do well as the all-rounder of the side. Adds a lot of balance to the team that was really needed. So yeah, hopefully looking forward to a good season for Ben Stokes as well. And you never know, he may be appointed as the captain after Dhoni decides to retire. So yeah, let's see what they have in the mind. So
look, this guy is a bit more charismatic the way he plays. And maybe they're looking at him as a potential captaincy option. They tried Jadeja there, and they have been able to retain Jadeja, isn't it?
Yeah, they did retain Jadeja after all the ruckus that was caused last year. So yeah, good to see him stay in the yellow jersey. So
right, and you'd be happy as a CSK fan with how they have shaped up for the coming season then?
Yeah, of course I am happy, because there are talks about the death bowling concerns, but I think the death bowling has been the concern for CSK for like from the start of the IPL. I guess the last death bowler I remember was Doug Bollinger bowling those hard lengths in the death over. So after that, Bravo came, but yeah, it was all along Bravo and no one apart from him. So death bowling has been a concern for us, but yeah, I think they have compensated that with the batting depth that we have, and the team has too many of options for quite a few options for a single spot that, you know, Dhoni likes how his team should shape up. So yeah, he can have like 2-3 bowling options, extra bowling option apart from the 5 bowlers, and then the batting depth is always insane since 2021. So yeah, hoping for a good season.
All right, so let's quickly cover the white elephant in the room, Dhoni himself. Do you see him last out the season, or do you see him like maybe halfway through the season step back into a back office role?
You never know these things with Dhoni, because I mean, he'll do what he thinks is right for the team or what needs to be done. So yeah, hopefully he'll come good with the bat this season, because as a captain, I mean, there's no replacement for MS Dhoni, the captain. So yeah, and you know, in 2021 season, we saw that CSK merely played with 10 players, I can say that, because Dhoni wasn't performing with the bat, and then in the later half, he just demoted, came to bat at like number 8, number 9. So yeah. But he did step up when the team required him to in the first qualifier against Delhi. So yeah, you'll see him do what needs to be done. So yeah,
I just think there are not as many wonderful performances left in that frame of his. But I think he'll cork it out once or twice at least.
And we can be honest, he's lacking match practice. I mean, he doesn't play for like 10 years, just comes to play the IPL for a couple of months. So yeah, you need match practice to be consistent. So. But yeah, he did finish the match against MI last year. So yeah, hopefully a couple of performances like that and a title win to, you know, end his, if he decides to retire. So yeah.
All right. I think we can quickly go to the second team, which I think still many people support. That would be Mumbai Indians. How about them?
Yeah, I think they were very keen to buy Sam Curran in the auctions. After Pollard retired, they needed someone to, you know, fill his shoes. But after Sam Curran was snatched away from CSK and MI by the Punjab Kings, I think they panicked a bit. And I think, and with Cameron Green coming into the, coming before Ben Stokes, I think they just went all out for him. And, you know, the batting needs to be seen as how or how they'll manage to fit in the players in their right or ideal position, because I don't think Cameron Green is an ideal T20 batter at number 6-7 or into that finisher role. But if you can and with Rohit will always open, and Ishan Kishan, I think they'll go for him as well at the top. So Cameron Green, I think he'll bat at 3 then. But then again, you have to drop down Tilak Verma or someone like Dewald Brevis as well. He was very impressive for them last year. So, but one thing that will come handy to for the Mumbai Indians is the impact player rule. I think they can just switch players according to the match situation or how they need them to be. They have a great squad, obviously, plenty of talented players, match winners. So yeah, let's see how they shape up their batting order is what I'm interested to see.
Well, with the impact player, I was going to bring it up as a separate question, but now that you've mentioned it, for Mumbai, I think because they are more impactful players are not Indian. And this one requires that you have to first field an Indian player, right? That's unless there are less than 4 foreign players in the 11 or something, only then you can field a foreign player, if I remember right. So for me, I think they might not be the most effective when it comes to usage of the impact player, but I mean it's something which we'll get to see maybe halfway through the season which team has sort of learned to use the impact player well. It's a new thing, right? So like most of the new rules, yeah. I'm very curious how they'll go. From Mumbai, if we go quickly to my favorite team and oftentimes much followed team online, but they are either yet to deliver anything, RCB.
Yeah, so RCB had a pretty settled squad before the auction. I think the last couple of season they have had a great squad, very settled squad with almost all the bases covered. But yeah, they do needed to plug a few holes, and I think they did. Yeah, they were quite decent in the auction because they bought Will Jacks as Glenn Maxwell's backup. So Jacks can, you know, bat. He can bowl those off spinner, very aggressive with the bat. Can bat in like anywhere in the top six. So yeah, a good player of spin bowling as well. So Will Jacks was a good buy, and then again another great buy. Great buy from RCB was Rhys Topley, because Josh Hazlewood is someone you. I think he looked at his workload just before the Ashes. So yeah, he needs to be fresh for the IPL as well. So Rhys Topley is a great buy. He can swing the new ball, bowl in the death. Great buy and very smart buys as well, considering the budget that RCB had in the auctions.
Right.
And and one more thing, the very positive thing for RCB is Faf du Plessis's current form. I mean, he's found his form again with the bat, something like that, because he's just starting to bat very aggressively in the power play itself. He did that in the Caribbean Premier League in the Big Bash again this season. He's doing that, so, and he's attacking the spinners as well quite well, which was an area where he struggled in the power play or even in the T20s generally. So good to see him attacking the spinner straight away, just taking down the bowling. So, and if he can replicate that in the IPL, that will be a great thing for the RCB.
Right.
For RCB. And yeah, and with Virat Kohli and Faf opening, you want someone to at least give the bat quickly in the power play, take some risks. So Faf is great to see Faf doing that. And I think he'll do that in the IPL as well, because the IPL is back to the original format with one home and one away game. So 7 games at the Chinnaswamy Stadium, Faf should be great at the top for RCB, and considering the form he is at the moment, I think he'll do well.
Well, that brings me to my next question. They didn't or they don't yet show us who'll be the successor to Faf once, you know, maybe 1 or 2 years down the line, maybe Faf and Virat both might not be there. Who'd be the next opener as well as who'd be the next captain?
Yes, so for opener, they have Finn Allen from New Zealand. I mean, one of the best batters, young batters in T20 cricket at the moment, if you ask me, can take down any kind of bowling in the power play. And once he gets off, you know, he'll just win the game for you. So that's not a concern opening. But I think, yeah, they should start looking at Faf's successor. I mean, I think they must have talked with Faf. I mean, for how long he's going to play. And if he plays for like couple of more seasons, you never know. They can always buy someone from the mini auction or the mega auction if it happens again. So, yeah, but I think they are more focused on quick results at the moment. And Faf with the bat is performing really well. He's quite experienced as a captain and as a player in T20 cricket. So, I guess they are not they won't be concerned about, you know, about the future, but they'll be more focused on, you know, to first of all win a title in the IPL. So
absolutely, I mean, for all the hype, I mean, come on, one of the most disappointing teams.
They surprisingly released Lovanit Sisodia as well, who was the wicketkeeper batter from Karnataka, and I haven't seen him play, but the people who follow domestic cricket quite closely said that he is an exciting talent and can be a match winner with the bat. So, and with Dinesh Karthik's form, you know, since the last World Cup, is a bit iffy, and so I think they must have gone for a good domestic wicketkeeper, if not an overseas player. So yeah, hopefully Karthik will come good, but if he doesn't, that's going to be a concern for them lower down the order, because then they have Shahbaz Ahmed, one Indu Asaranga. Those guys are good with the bat, with the experience Karthik brings in, and you know, he played some clutch knocks in the last season. So yeah, they'll be very hopeful that he comes good.
I mean, really, for me, the problem with RCB has always been a strong start and sort of fizzling away where the other teams pick it up. We'll see if that they can really change. That's the thing that's holding them back, I think. Moving on to Delhi Capitals.
Yeah, so quite an interesting team at the moment, I see. So they let go of Kagiso Rabada after the last mega auction, in the last mega auction, and then they retained Anrik Norkia over him. So I think that was a good decision. But then the overseas pace backup that you see for someone like Anrik Norkia is not that good, if you ask me, because they have Lungi Angedi, very expensive in T20 cricket. Khalil Ahmed has been great for them, but he has been injured recently, and it will be interesting to see if he's fit or not for the IPL. Then they have, I think they needed a good lower middle order batter, Indian batter. They have Lalit Yadav. They have persisted with him for a couple of seasons now, but I don't think he's at that level yet. He hasn't done justice to the backing that he has got. One really interesting buy was Phil Salt. I think Phil Salt with, you know, David Warner or even Prithvi Shaw, he is a backup wicket, backup opener, but if he plays, he's very aggressive with the bat, and you know, the DC openers are, I think, one of the best in the tournament with Prithvi Shaw and David Warner. They'll need someone to back Mitchell Marsh, because he's very injury prone. Despite not bowling that much, he's very injury prone, and they have got Riley Russo, so I think that's a good buy. But then, you know, the quality of Indian batters, except for Rishabh Pant and Prithvi Shaw in the 11, is a little bit iffy. They have Yash Dhul, I think, but he's yet to play a game.
Right.
So, yeah, you know, they'll depend on their young, big guns to fire if they have to do well this season.
All right. So, from them, let's go to the champions, current champions, Gujarat Titans. Did they do justice?
Yeah, they did. I think after the last auction, nobody gave them a chance to, you know, that they'll even qualify for the tournaments. But, you know, they punched over their weight and, you know, just won the title. So, and they didn't needed to do a lot in the auction. They just needed to do a few upgrades, I think, and they have done that quite well. So they bought in Odin Smith. Good.
Cheap buy.
Yeah, cheap buy and excellent if you utilize him properly. Not like Punjab, where he, you know, only needed to bowl in the death overs as well. And we saw like that Tevatia. And yeah, they finally saved him from Lord Tevatia by picking him up in the Gujarat side. So,
all right.
Then they bought up Kane Williamson, which I think was just, you know, you don't see. I didn't expect Gujarat to bid for Williamson, but the other overseas batter they had was Matthew Wade, I think he has still underperformed in the IPL. So Williamson at 3 will be I think I'm still very optimistic about Kane that he'll do well in the IPL or with the bat in the upcoming time. So yeah, hopefully Kane has a good season with the bat, and he brings a lot of experience as well for Hardik, or he'll be a good and very experienced guy in the core team for Gujarat. So with him, David Miller, Hardik Pandya, Rashid Khan, these kind of guys, you know, they form a strong core for the side. They have quite a few very exciting young players, Sai Sudarshan, Abhinav Manohar, but one of them, I think, has to sit out or will not bat at his ideal position with Williamson at 3. So
right,
let's see.
And Shikhar Bharat this year as well.
Yeah, Shrikar Bharat. Yeah, so they needed a backup keeper, but Riddhiman Sahay is there. He has done well in the power play for them. So yeah, they'll be hopeful that he continues his good form. They have got a excellent spin attack with Rashid Khan, arguably the best spinner in the world in T20 cricket. Then they have Sai Kishore, very very exciting talent, and then Noor Ahmed as well. So right. If Rashid is injured or that never happens, but if he's unavailable for any reason, they can straight away go with Noor Ahmed. And yeah, they also bought in Joshua Little. Right. That was an excellent buy considering they let go of Loki Ferguson. So yeah, Alzari Joseph, Joshua Little form a very strong pace duo with and alongside Mohammad Shami. Yeah, the pace attack looks quite good.
Fair enough. So now to Lucknow Super Giant.
Yeah, so Lucknow also didn't need it to do much in the auction, but yeah, and the side is looking very settled with Dickock and Rahul opening another excellent opening pair, and now they have got Nicholas Pooran in their side, who just straight away fits into the 11, fits into the size, was the missing puzzle if you ask me, because they badly needed someone who can bash the spinners in the middle overs, and a left-hander batter, and just Nicholas Pooran just does that, and he's a good player, match winner if he gets set or if he gets going. So yeah, and they have a very explosive top 4-5 I think, with Rahul Dickock, Deepak Hooda, Pooran, and then Marcus Stoinis. I think they needed to buy a good backup for Mark Wood, and I think they failed in doing that because they have got Naveen Ul Haq. I think so they are just two separate different kinds of bowler. Mark Wood quite absolutely hits the deck hard, bowls 150. Naveen Ul Haq relies on his cutter slower. So yeah, I think they missed out a good opportunity there, and they have plenty of overseas all-rounders in their side as well, because they have Kyle Mayers, they bought in Daniel Sams, then they again bought in Romario Sheffield. So
I think that's the thing, those two, they expect one of these two will sort of stand up, and then you have the bankable Jaydev Vinathkar, right? He's sort of, at least he'll give you 7-8 good games in a season, so they're sort of banking on him, I think.
And they, yeah, the one area they lack is, I think, a good Indian middle order batter, because apart from Deepak Hooda, I think Ayush Bhaduri is quite young, inexperienced. Manan Vora, we haven't seen him play in the IPL for quite a long time now. Right. And I don't think they have another good Indian batter in their ranks. So yeah, then again with the kind of top five they have, they'll expect their big players to, you know, come to the party and do well consistently.
Right. So now on to Punjab Kings.
Yeah, so I mean, Punjab Kings is a very, you know, interesting team, because they let go of Mayank Agarwal, who was the only player retained just before the 2022 mega auction, and he led the side last season, but they let go of him and they just made Shikhar Dhawan the captain. So it was quite a interesting move. For me, because Dhawan's T20 form, we're not so sure about his T20 form. So yeah, they'll be hopeful that he comes good with the bat. But they have a solid, you know, the solid group of overseas players in Johnny Bairstow, Liam Livingston. So those alongside Shikhar Dhawan, then again Jitesh Sharma did an excellent job for them. Then they have Bhanuka Rajapaksa, who in the little opportunities that he got last season just throwed his bat at everything, gave a quick start. So they still have a good, they still haven't found the right replacement for Mayank Agarwal, because he was a good Indian opener, gave good starts in the power play. Although I'm not a big fan of Mayank, the T20 batter, but he used to do well in the power play at least. So they'll need to find who can replace him. So they've got Prabhsimran Singh. I think he played one or two games, was a decent, but yeah, you know, then again they'll need their Indian all-rounders or the Indian bowlers to come good with Harshdeep Singh there. Now they bought Sam Curran, the most expensive buy of the IPL history.
Well, but I think he'll do good for them. I think he's a much of a impact player, right?
Yeah, but I think they really didn't needed him, so because they have to, you know, drop one of their overseas batters from Rajapaksa, Livingstone, Bairstow, who could have batted at the top for them, for Sam Curran. I mean, he increases the strength in the bowling, but the batting, you know, it leaves them a bit shaky at the top if there are a couple of early wickets. So yeah, let's see how they go.
All right, then how about Kolkata Knight Riders?
I mean, KKR are going through a rough patch in the on the auction table since the last mega auction, because they've just the first 11 looks good, but they don't have, I think, proper backup players and are too much dependent on Andre Russell with the bat in the lower order, or I can say Andre Russell or Sunil Narayan. They are very much dependent on them to do well. But they did manage to, you know, bring in Lockie Ferguson, and Rahmanullah Gurbaz was an excellent buy for them. I think they really needed a solid opener, and Gurbaz is someone who can just take the game away from the opposition in the power play itself. So yeah, that was a good buy, and I think they have a good first 11. But if in case someone is injured, and we know Russell is always carrying those niggles, so they'll have to look for what they'll do after if Russell or someone else is injured. They did manage to buy David Visa, and I think it was a great buy. But Visa's bowling style suits slow decks or two-pace decks where the ball grips spins. So on true wickets, like, I mean, if Russell is injured and they'll bring in Visa on deck like Wankhede, Chinnaswamy, or even at Kolkata. So yeah, that quite can be a problem for them. But yeah, Visa is a great buy, and their everlasting love with Shakib Al Hasan continues. So
Bengali love. No worries there. I mean, that's understandable as well.
Yeah, but I don't think where he slots in, because he, if you are batting him anywhere apart from number three, his value just goes down. He's excellent with the ball, but I think the batting value also needs to be with the balance, like for a player like Shakib. So if they decide to play him, I don't see where he'll bat for them. So, and they also managed to get in Shardul Thakur from the Delhi Capitals. So quite an interesting buy. I think he was they thought he'll be a like-to-like replacement for Pat Cummins. I mean, both go for runs in the death overs, but I think Cummins' value with the bat was a very high when compared to Shardul, because Cummins was consistent. He took on Bumrah in the game against MI. So they'll be hopeful that Shardul performs well with the bat as well. So, and his knack of picking up wickets. So they'll be hopeful that the Lord Shardul turns up in the IPL for them.
Absolutely. I think Lord Shardul needs to do a bit there in the lower middle order, but we'll see how that goes. That leaves us with a couple of interesting teams. I thought very interesting sort of buys. Rajasthan Royals.
Yeah, I was almost 100% sure that they'll go for Jason Holder, because they needed an all-rounder at number 7, and he's the part of their sister franchise in the CPL, Barbados Royals. So
right.
Yeah, I was very sure that they'll go for Holder, but they also bid it for Sam Curran, I think, for a bit, and Ben Stokes as well. So yeah, those were quite interesting. I mean, if it would be interesting to see if they had gotten those players they were bidding for, what would have been with the Holder, with Jason Holder. So
well,
yeah, and I think the 11 looks very settled. They didn't have to do quite a lot. So yeah, but I am only skeptical about Devdutt Padikkal at number 4, if he bats at number 4, because he tends to start a bit slow. And I think it's time for them to promote Riyan Parag at number 4.
Do you think he's really ready for a number 4 role? Because that can be sort of the most important role even now in T20s.
I think he is, and that's his ideal position. I mean, it has been like 3-4 seasons since Riyan Parag has played for the Royals, and I mean, they are underutilizing him with the bat, I think, because in one game, I remember when he batted before the 10-over mark, he scored a 50, and you know, all the teams are fairly strong in the IPL, and you know, while batting that early in the innings and scoring 50 runs, so it shows that he's ready. So I think it's time for them to finally promote Parag at number 4, and I would have dropped Padikkal with Parag at 4. So yeah, let's see how they go.
I mean, look, they have a very strong top 3, right? You'll have Padikkal, Josh Butler, and maybe Joe Root, because he's also there. I don't know if he'll be playing
a couple of interesting buys in Joe Root and Adam Zampa as well. Adam Zampa's buy was, you know, a bit surprising as well, because they already have Yuzvendra Chahal and R. Ashwin in their ranks, probably the best spin duo in the tournament. So yeah, but let's see what they are thinking. A good, more than good backup for Yuzi Chahal, Zampa. So
Sunrisers.
Yeah, so I was a bit disappointed after SRX auction. They did fairly well. They have a good strong squad, but I wanted to see them go for a, you know, they got in Mayank Agarwal, but I wanted, and Harry Brook as well. But I would have preferred them going for a solid, explosive overseas opener who could just take on the bowling from the first ball. So Mayank has done well in the power play, but I'm very skeptical about him being a consistent match winner for his team, in especially in T20 cricket. Because I think if he doesn't get going, he's just a burden to the batting unit. And they bought Harry Brook for quite a hefty price. So, and with the likes of Markram and Phillips already there in the middle order, I think they should have gone for a good overseas opener. I think someone like Paul Sterling or Phil Salt as well. So, but I think they are looking for their captain as well. And Mayank, I expect Mayank to lead the side. So let's see how it goes. But I would have preferred Markram leading the side and then them going for a good overseas opener, like someone like Phil Salt, even Paul Sterling as well. So that would have maintained the balance as well. Because with Mayank, I personally think Mayank should bat a bit more aggressively in the power play. But let's see. Hopefully, it'll do well for them.
Yeah, I think they might be one of the underrated teams going into the auction. At least after the auction, let me say.
Yeah, they are one of the sides who are heavily dependent on their Indian pacers. So with Umran Malik, Bhuvneshwar and Natarajan, they'll expect them to do well. And with Karthik Tyagi is also their very exciting talent. So let's see.
They also have Marco Jansen and they have Fazlul Haq Farooqi. I mean, they have a few also good options.
And Akhil Hossain as well. He was an excellent buy. So
I'll tell you why I think they have a very underrated squad. Because with Glenn Phillips, right? Aidan Markram, Rahul Tripathi, Glenn Phillips, they have a very decent sort of 11. I can see a very decent 11 forming up, at least on paper, right? So, but how they go through, it remains to be seen.
Yeah, and a very explosive batting unit as well. If not very explosive, a fairly decent batting unit with the likes of, you know, Abhishek Sharma did well last season with Abhishek opening and alongside Mayank, then number 3, Rahul Tripathi, then followed by Markram and Phillips at number 5. It's a very strong batting unit. Both Markram and Phillips are excellent players of spin bowling, can take down any kind of bowling on their day. So, hopefully they'll do well. But as I said earlier, I would have preferred a good overseas opener over Mayank, if I'm being honest.
Interesting. But let's see. I mean, they have some plans and you're probably right. They'll want Mayank to captain. So, that brings us sort of a roundup of all 10 teams. So, if you were to quickly go through your options for who could be a really strong, let's say, give me top 4 teams that you see in sort of, you know, top 4 finish.
Yeah, so my CSK bias will, you know, will take over and it will be always there. But I have with the IPL going to its traditional format, you know, 7 games will be played at Chepauk, and with the kind of spin attack and the batters that we have, I'm expecting them to win like 5 games at Chepauk. Then, yeah, so CSK will be one team. I think the other team will be Gujarat, then Lucknow. And for the fourth spot, it will be a tussle between, I think, RCB, Rajasthan Royals, and maybe Hyderabad. Because Josh Butler literally carried the batting, Royals' batting last season. So, and you don't get similar performances every season. So, I'm very interested to see how the other batters do this time. But I think CSK, Gujarat, and Lucknow will be the top 3 sides, or they are surely going to be in the top 4. And for the fourth spot, it will be a fight between Rajasthan, SRH and RCB.
Interesting. I don't think I completely disagree with you there. However, well, I wouldn't completely say, you know, Lucknow Super Giant may find themselves in the mix. RCB sort of touch and go again. I think they'll need to play out of their skins, actually. But let's see. All right. That sort of rounds up our IPL section. If you were to quickly go through some of the cricketing news stories that we have. So, something that brought me a bittersweet feeling, because Azhar Ali retired at the end of the England home series. He's one of those, you know, people like Cheteshwar Pujara, who's sort of meant for the longer format and meant for the old school longer format approach, right? So he's retired. About time, I thought. The returns were diminishing quite quickly for him. So better to retire rather than be dropped, as they say. But well done him. And well, he scored a triple 100, and I think he once scored a triple 100 in a day night game if I'm not wrong. So those will remain very unique records as far as he's concerned. And he brought some very crucial stability for Pakistan over the last 5-6 years, I think. So in the test matches, I dare say they will miss him a little bit. Like, for example, today in the game, maybe if he was there, he would make sure they would go on a bit longer. This is the feeling I get. But, well, he's gone. We wish him all the best. And, well, when it comes to pitches, right? So somehow a lot of eyes are always on the Asian pitches. So Rawalpindi was rated below par for the second time in 2022. So they had put up a rather sad pitch when Australia went there, and now when England went there, it took all of England's air quotes bass ball to get a result out of it. But again, it was pretty much a dead pitch, a road, as it's called. But then, interestingly, Australia also, you know, the first test between South Africa and Australia was also not considered to be a good pitch. So again, it was considered too green, if such a thing is possible, because they said, I mean, it finished literally in 2 days. So for a test match to have finished with the second shortest period of all time in Australia, that was the Brisbane pitch. So any surprises there for you, or do you think it was just bad batting in the first test?
I mean, it was quite surprising, but I personally didn't find that pitch that bad, because, you know, we all love to see the fast bowlers just troubling the batters. So that was quite good to see. So, but yeah, that the pitch shouldn't be that extreme. So yeah, it was quite surprising to see a pitch play like that, especially in Australia.
So, well, I mean, at least the people who you expect, the hard people, the hard men, Alan Border came out and said, no, what are you talking about? And so on. So they're like, batsmen didn't apply themselves. They just gave their wickets away. It was not that bad a pitch. It should have gone at least into the 4 day, he said. But he's always known for his absolute no-nonsense approach, Border, and he's very special that way. But okay. All right. So outside of that, well, we'll stick to Pakistan cricket for a couple of more news stories. So Ramiz Raja was removed as the PCB chairperson. Along with that, there have been some reshuffling going on with the committees. The selection committee has been sacked, right? So usually the patron of Pakistan Cricket Board is the Prime Minister of Pakistan. And with the change in government, usually you see also a change in the PCB power structure. And that has come to pass. It rather came a little later than we had all hoped. They sort of jumped on the 3-0 defeat of Pakistan, and then they blamed the board and so on. So now Najam Sethi has stepped in as the PCB chairperson. He's a very experienced hand. He's been round the posts a few times. So he's now the head, and well, he's appointed a very interesting interim chairman of selection committee. Any surprises for you there?
Yeah, I wasn't expecting him to be the chairman. So
I think we should say it's Shahid Afridi. For anybody who's still not heard of it, that took me by an absolute surprise, because, I mean, frankly, I mean, nothing against Shahid Afridi, right? He's a very mercurial sort of a character. And things like continuity, things like sort of stability, these are not the things you would easily advertise and say, this is the guy for that, right? But, well, I mean, he's there now. At least it's an interim post. So do you see him sort of getting maybe 2 series before he's being then judged, or he's being then made permanent? Or do you see this really just as a 2-week, 3-week thing?
I think he'll stay there. If I personally think that he'll stay there, because he's a, you know, big icon in Pakistan cricket. So hoping that but typically how Pakistan cricket is, I won't be surprised if he just acts straight away after a series defeat or a couple of bad performances. So you never know.
I really hope it doesn't come that quickly, but because he didn't get a chance to pick this team, because this team was already picked, the one that's playing New Zealand for the test series. So he'll have to be given a couple of series, I think. But also, I've heard him in interviews, and he's talking of building a star power. He says, we don't have the stars anymore like we used to do in our days and so on. And I'm curious how he would sort of take an approach. So sometimes, right, a very stable, steady approach that some other establishments and setups take is not always for everyone. Like England cricket learned a lot from the Australian-England setup, and they sort of consolidated and they tried to, you know, think that way, where a huge structure is underneath and a player who's sort of coming through the system is put through a lot of grinds, and once he comes through, he'll not be easily discarded either, and so on, right? So this is a system where you have a lot of players. Sometimes a direct approach where a star is made in front of everyone. Sometimes you come to the big stage already as a star, right? In India, England, Australia, maybe. But in Pakistan, it's not always like that. Pakistan, Sri Lanka, you see, they come on the stage and then they become stars. And sometimes that might just be the right way for Pakistan because they have delivered results. They have won World Cups. So somebody like Shahid Afridi, even though it might approach, it might appear like an absolutely left field decision, might be an interesting one if he's stuck with. I'm curious though. I mean, I'm also looking at, as I said, consistency, sort of other things. So let's see how that goes. So those were some of the other Pakistan related news. So the team that's playing them currently, New Zealand, has a small change. They have a new long-term test keeper in Team Saudi, fast bowler. Again, something we don't see very often, fast bowlers being appointed test captains. Right now, we have two in Pat Cummins and Tim Saudi. But more importantly, Kane Williamson has decided to stop. Did that take you by surprise at all?
I think he wanted to focus on his white ball game. So, and with the elbow injury that he has had, so I think playing test for a long time wasn't a great idea for him as well. So, yeah, and I think he really wants to, or is desperate to, you know, prove the critics wrong and do well in the white ball again. So, and hopefully he does that, because we used to see the Kane Williamson of 2016. I mean, in the IPL he was the orange cap winner. So, right. It'll be good if he regains his touch with the bat. So.
Absolutely. But I think you have hit the nail on the head. I think his elbow injury could probably limit his test match career to no more than maybe a year or 18 months, the way I look at it. Maybe he's good until one more season, and then he'll probably start playing the shorter formats a bit more. That's why he's retained the captaincy of the shorter format as well, and sort of makes sense for me. So, yeah, I think well spotted as far as I'm concerned. That brings us to the end of all the topics we wanted to talk about this episode. But before we let you go, would you like to give a shout out about your online presence or any work you are currently taking up in cricketing terms and so on?
Yeah, so I write about the game for a couple of websites. So it's Crick Blog, it's on Crick Blog and Crick X Stacy at the moment. I recently joined Rario as well. So if you are playing in the Rario D3 club game, you can look at the blogs. I'm sure they'll be helpful for you. So, and cricket writing is something that, you know, you always want to be involved with the game in any way. So that way that I can connect with the game. So yeah, if you can check that out on my Twitter profile. So that's what I do in my free time. So.
So would you like to give out your Twitter profile as well, please?
Yeah, so it's Robin_Rounder.
All right. Thank you very much. So it was a very nice chat, Robin. And I look forward to having you many more times in the upcoming episodes.
Yeah. Thanks for having me, and really looking forward to the future chats that we are going to have about the game. So yeah, really, really looking forward, and thanks for having me.
No, I mean, the pleasure is all mine. I must say thanks to you as well. Really, really nice chat. Thank you very much. So I wish all our listeners once again happy festivities and a happy upcoming new year. Have a good day wherever you might be. Thanks all, and bye-bye.
This is the Armchair Cricket Podcast.